name is Walter Dickinson. I'm the programming coordinator for something called the Toronto Cartoonist Workshop. We do courses for people interested in entering into mainstream comics. We have instructors like Ty Templeton, Ramon Perez, Jay Bone, Paul Ravache, and a number of others. And there's some flyers circulating around. I would urge you to grab one and check it out to see what we'll be offering. In collaboration with Toronto Comic Con Fan Appreciation Event today, we're doing some workshops and panels on process. And we're lucky enough today to have Jeff Lemire here to talk about his current work at DC and his work in Indie Comics. Jeff is a recipient of the Young Adult Services Live Association Alex Award for Essex County Volume 1. He's received Joe Shuster Award for Outstanding Cartoonist in 2008. He's also been a Doug Wright Award recipient for Best Emerging Talent in 2008. Current works include Sweet Tooth for Vertigo, which I hope everyone's reading. Upcoming works include Underwater Welder for Top Shelf, which will be out in 2012. Brightest Day, Adam Special, and the ongoing co-feature in Adventure Comics. And also Superboy, an ongoing series with the Connor Kent character, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with, who's a Kryptonian clone hybrid of Superman and Lex Luthor. Maybe to start with, we'll talk a little bit about Jeff's current projects for DC. He started out in the trenches in Indie Comics and has since managed to navigate his way into working with some very hot properties at DC. First of all, let's talk about the Atom. How did this project come about, and why this particular character?
It was kind of just came out of the blue. Can you guys hear me? Okay. Literally, I was just working on Sweet Tooth one afternoon, and Jeff Johns called and asked if I wanted to write the Atom. I mean, it wasn't.
You weren't lobbying for.
No,
this,
it wasn't a character that I sort of was like, oh, I gotta write the Atom. He's really cool.
Were you excited about that? You go, oh, it's the Atom. Or were you like, oh,
it was just kind of exciting to get offered anything in DC at that point, because I mean, I grew up reading DC comics mostly, and I've always wanted to try my hand at superhero stuff and see what I could do with it and stuff. So just to be given any character really was exciting, but it's cool to be given sort of one of the original Silver Age characters, you know what I mean? And one who, the good thing about the Atom, I think, is that there hasn't really been a definitive story, I don't think, told yet about him. I mean, I really liked that old 80s sort of the Atom stuff, but that was sort of like almost like an alternate take on him. And as far as like the classic kind of Ray Palmer Atom, there hadn't been like one book you could pick up and really get into.
Let's say this is.
I mean, you could read the old Silver Age stuff, which is great, but I mean a modern sort of take on it. So
sure.
What they really wanted was for me to take all that stuff that made it cool in the Silver Age, but sort of put a modern spin on it.
So this isn't a revisioning, this is more going back to the
actually
roots.
I am revising the origin quite a bit. I'm surprised at how much they let me change it. I don't know, the original origin is really stupid. It's like, he's like a research student at university trying to shrink stuff, and then he just, something happens where there's like a cave-in with these kids and a meteor, and it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. So I try to make it make a little more sense somehow, but I mean, it's still ridiculous. But
did you have all this stuff, or did you supply
it back? I just went out and grabbed those showcases that you can find, just read through them. But I mean, I know all those characters. I grew up reading all those guys, so I had a pretty strong base.
Well, you're a pretty big DC fan, right?
Yeah, I was always a DC kid. I more than Marvel for whatever reason. So,
can you throw any light on that? Why
I don't know.
One more?
I think
than
it's just when I was a kid. I mean, I grew up in a really small town, and you can only get comics at a couple places, like the grocery store or, you know, the corner gas station or whatever. And maybe those stores just stocked more DC or for some reason. I don't know. It just seemed to be always what was on hand when I went each week to pick out a comic. It always seemed to be a DC one. I guess those characters whatever characters you read as a kid seem to be the ones that stick with people. So
you gravitated more towards like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, that
sort
of stuff.
Yeah, and I don't know. DC always had like that crazy multiverse stuff where there was always like multiple versions of all the characters and all these different Earths. It just seemed like such a wild, big universe. Something about it I really enjoyed as a kid.
I know I've seen pictures of your studio online. You have a giant poster. Yeah. Is that from Crisis of Infinite Earths?
Yeah, I'm a nerd. It's
I think anybody in alternative comics, if you scratch them underneath, they have a history of being involved with superheroes. Although some people try and hide it, and some people are very cool about it.
Yeah, everyone tries to be cool and pretend they don't like superheroes when they're in indie comics, but they're all just jealous and they wish they could do it. That's fun to do both. That's for sure.
I was reading a little bit about your taking on this, and DC says that they plan to bring back the key characters back to their origins. How do you plan on taking them back to his roots? Do you have a particular idea in mind?
Ray Palmer, we're talking.
Palmer.
If you read any of these characters, like, they've all been around since the 60s, so there's so much has happened to them between then and now. Like, if you try to read their life story, it's just completely ridiculous. So basically, you just kind of have to forget all the stuff. There's all this stuff with his wife who was like went crazy and turned into like a supervillain and all. It's like all these crazy stories that have happened that you just sort of just pretend none of that stuff really happened and just kind of start fresh again.
Start out with the basics.
You start out. You just basically, you know, what are the basics of the Atom? He's a teacher and a scientist who learns how to shrink himself and becomes a superhero. So it's like you just take that and like modernize it. And I don't know. It's fun. It's
What is Shrinko Jitsu?
I don't know.
Work out. You worked that.
I had this really good idea for a new fighting style for the Atom, where he'd be like shrinking and growing really fast and kicking everyone's ass, but it didn't really translate to the artist.
Okay.
Which is something I'm learning. Writing for other people has been, the learning curve has been pretty steep, but
really?
I think I've gotten the hang of it now for the Superboy stuff. I'm feeling more confident about that. So.
Actually, that was another question that I wanted to ask you. You've mostly illustrated your own stuff, except for, was it 5 pages on Beowulf, I believe?
Someone else wrote that, yeah.
That, and you illustrated
my first paying gig that I never got paid for.
Yes, I think many people didn't get paid by that particular company. Would you consider illustrating other people's scripts if you were offered that?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a writer, I really respect it. I did a little. I did, there was a 5-page House of Mystery that I did with Matt Sturgis. That was fun. I like it. It's just, I mean, drawing takes so much time that if I'm going to spend that much time doing something, I want to spend it doing my own stuff that I care about, because there's just not enough time to do it otherwise.
It would have to be a project you were really
It would have to be someone that just, like, you know, if Alan Moore calls me tomorrow, I probably would draw that. I don't think that's going to happen.
Now, you're also going to be working on Superboy.
Yeah.
This kind of seems like a natural gimme in terms of your doing it because of the rural setting.
Yeah.
How did your involvement with this particular...
I started working on the Atom stuff, and it's just like at Vertigo when I started with the Nobody. It's like you kind of get your foot in the door, so you want to immediately line up your next project before it closes again. So I was starting to think of, okay, what else can I pitch to DC now that they kind of know me and stuff. And so I started thinking of like the most obscure DC characters that don't have books anymore, like, and pitching all these crazy characters like the Blue Devil, and I can't remember who else they pitched, and they were like, no, there's no market for these books. And I was like, well, I don't know what to pitch, because all the main characters already have books and all the other stuff's so obscure, so it's hard for me to know what to pitch. And they were just like, well, what about Superboy? Because I guess they needed someone.
Sure.
And at first I didn't make that connection, the rural setting and stuff. I was just like, oh, I don't know. But as soon as I started thinking about it, it did seem like a natural fit. I mean, I love telling rural stories, and if I could tell Superboy stories that were just focused a lot on the community and the small town and stuff, I thought that would be something interesting, so that's what I'm trying to do.
You're going
to
try and do that for the first year, I think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to plan beyond the first year, because I honestly, like, who knows how much I'll even enjoy doing this stuff, so it's kind of my first time trying it out, so I don't want to commit too much to it, but for me, the whole focus of the book is sort of focusing on Smallville as, like, the small town, and having, like, building, like, kind of like I did in Essex County, like, this cast of characters around him that are, like, you know, real small town people, but one of them just happens to be super powered. See what happens.
Well, it should be interesting from the same standpoint as the Nobody was, because you basically inserted someone with, you know, special powers or
yeah, it's
into this sort of.
You take like a small. I like taking like a small setting, or I like taking like some kind of a fantastic element in mm-hmm. general and putting it in sort of a real world setting. Like even like Essex County has sort of those elements of fantasy and stuff.
Right. Right.
It's kind of like taking like B movie concepts, but like I don't know, executing them like it's like a small art movie or something instead, and just getting a different take on those kind of things. So.
With Superboy, are you going to be doing any appearance changes for Connor Kent, or will he stay basically the same?
I kind of the black T-shirt thing. I was kind of like, maybe we can get a costume.
Get a red T-shirt.
They want to keep the T-shirt, yeah. So we're staying with the T-shirt.
And would you be using other characters from the Superboy mythos? Will Crypto be coming?
Crypto's a big character, and I want to do like a love story with Crypto in the first year. It should be fun. He's going to fall in love with another little dog in town, and tragedy's going to strike. But it's all going to happen like in the background, like I'm never going to draw attention to it. It'll
be a subplot.
Yeah, like a hidden subplot, which you guys will not be looking for. But I'm trying to like bring all like the most non-Superboy characters I can think of into Superboy's life to make it interesting. Like one of the main characters is going to be the Phantom Stranger, and all these sort of weird DC characters that no one's really using, and kind of have them stopping by Smallville. And it's going to be almost like, I actually shouldn't say this, but I'm trying to, I'm almost writing like a horror book, but
wow.
A Superboy book in a weird way, just because I want like, it's like this small town, but underneath there's like this weirdness bubbling that Superboy needs to figure out. So that's sort of the overarching story I'm telling.
That's
but
great.
Then I'm breaking it down into like one or two issue little mini stories too, sort of like they did in the Silver Age. So. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with Superboy. The Atom is fun too, and I'm not done it yet. So it's not like I'm totally writing it off or anything, but it was the first time working in that way, like me writing for somebody else, and I think I was still trying to figure it out the first couple issues I've written of the Atom, whereas starting on Superboy, I got that out of the way, so I feel like I'm a little more confident right from the start with the Superboy stuff.
Your other big project that you're currently working on is Underwater Welder, which is supposed to be, according to Top Shelf's website, 250 pages. Only got to 2012. I mean, that's a pretty breakneck work pace for an artist.
It's been really busy lately. I've been the system I've worked out with my editor on Sweet Tooth is that I'm about 3 to 4 issues ahead on Sweet Tooth right now, and I want to stay about at that pace. So what I do is I'll draw 2 issues of Sweet Tooth back to back, and that usually takes me about two or three weeks to do an issue. So that's like about a month or a little over a month that takes me to do that.
Okay.
And then I take,
so is that about a page and a half a day?
I try to do 2 pages a day.
2 pages a day, okay.
Yeah, and then so I'll do 2 issues back to back, and then I'll put Sweet Tooth away for a month and just do the equivalent amount on the welder.
Right.
So I'll do like 20 pages of that and then put that aside. It seems to be working though. I have about 60 or 70 pages of that book done now. So so it's where, and then the writing stuff, Superboy and all that stuff, I just sort of finding time on weekends and at night after my baby goes to sleep to write that stuff.
It's any spare moment?
Yeah, basically. So it's been really busy, but it's kind of that point where I'm getting a lot of opportunities thrown at me, so I'm trying to take advantage of them. And
can you tell us a little bit about Underwater Welder? I mean, it's got a pretty interesting premise.
Yeah, it's still pretty far off, so I don't want to give too much away.
Sure.
And I, honestly, I'm still...
Even if it's just a reiteration of what's on the website.
So the basic plot is it's this underwater welder who he's living in this sort of imaginary small town and off the east coast of Canada, like in Nova Scotia or Newfoundland. We never really say where it is, but sort of like Essex County, it's modeled on real places in the east coast, but it's not really a real place, do you know what I mean? And so he's living there with his wife, and she's expecting a baby, their first baby. He's like my age. And obviously I was writing this when I was expecting our first baby, so there's a lot of stuff going on there, but he's an underwater welder on this deep sea oil rig off the coast, and so he's gone for 2-3 weeks at a time diving while she's kind of alone in this town, and he's feeling a lot of pressure about impending fatherhood, and he has a lot of issues with his own father, who disappeared when he was 10 years old in a diving accident. He was like a... His father was sort of like a deadbeat, an alcoholic, and he was obsessed with like sunken treasure off all the ships that crashed in the harbor over the, like hundreds of years ago, so he's always like going down diving looking for stuff that he could hawk in his pawn shop and stuff, and one night he just disappears, and when, this is when our main character is 10. So now our main character is my age, and he's a deep sea diver himself, and one day when he's diving, something happens to him under the water that I don't want to give away, but when he surfaces, he's completely different, and the world's completely different, and he's got to kind of find his way back to his wife and unborn son. So that's kind of the premise.
That's a good hook. Now, Essex County is, I mean, it seems like there are huge amounts of that. It could be autobiographical. Obviously, you had to do some research for this particular book, or did you know somebody?
No, I didn't know anyone. No? I just... It's like with most of my projects, I'll just get like some kind of visual that keeps popping up, or like a kid with antlers, or you know, something that keeps popping up in my sketchbooks. And in this case, it was just like I got really into like drawing from divers.
Okay.
It was just fun for a while, and then you know you start to build a story around it and stuff. And,
did you read any?
But yeah,
books
I have been
documentaries.
Obviously, you have to research a lot. So right. I mean, I've been reading a lot about deep sea welding and stuff like that. And, but my stuff's so, I don't know, I can get away with faking the details sometimes.
Sure,
just because it's,
sure.
I always put mood and stuff ahead of that kind of...
Right.
But, yeah.
But
I mean,
you have that underlying research.
Yeah, there's always, you always need something to base it
sure.
on, right? So, yeah.
I understand your early post-secondary education was in film.
Yeah.
Why did you choose comics over film? What do you think this influence brings to the table in your work?
Well, I was trying to, I mean, I had a really hard time. I really wanted to tell stories always, like ever since I was a kid, I was always drawing comics or telling stories and stuff, and I think I just got to a point when I was in my later teens where I got really into movies, and I thought that would be what I was going to do, and so I went to film school here in Toronto, and I really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of sort of the style that I have now as cartoonist sort of was developing in my early film work and stuff, but I just film, it just seemed like it was so, you had to work with actors, crew members, you need money, there's just so many different factors that if you have an idea or a vision for a story, by the end of it, it's just so spread out, too many like comics is just so much more direct, where I can sit down, it's just me, and whatever I see in my head, I can make it happen, and plus, I just physically enjoy drawing so much that
right.
I think all these things just... By the time I was in my third or fourth year at film school, I just was kind of totally lost interest in it.
Did you finish
it? I finished it, but even the last year, I was just totally into comics again, and
right.
that's all I really wanted to do. So.
Did you storyboard a lot of your films?
No, I probably should have.
Okay. No,
I didn't draw a lot when I was in film school. I really stopped drawing and everything for a while, and then... I think it was just near the end, I started drawing again in that last year, and I just got so bad. I just remember how much I missed the physical act of drawing and stuff. So,
are you largely self-taught as a draftsman?
Yeah, I didn't really... I mean, I had a really good high school art teacher, but...
Right.
I mean, most of... It's all just self-taught, yeah. I mean, I just spent, like... When I got out of film school, that was, like, 2000, I think.
Uh-huh.
99 or 2000, and I spent a good 2 or 3 years just drawing every day for, like, 10 hours a day, really badly, just trying to figure stuff out, and teach myself, and, you know, you just see little bits of encouragement and something you're doing that kept me going, but it was all self-taught. So, yeah.
I see a lot of, now the reason I asked you about the storyboarding was quite often in your work, specifically in Sweet Tooth, I see a lot of long, long, narrow panels, almost,
yeah.
What's the proper ratio for,
yeah,
for
I know
film
what you mean.
Screen, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
just these long sort of.
Yeah, I prefer sort of the, I guess almost like widescreen kind of
yeah.
like letterbox.
Yeah,
16 by 9.
Yeah, whatever. I just that. that composition just seems to be what I... Maybe it did come from studying film and stuff, but I just find it it's much more clear a storytelling style to do that than square panels or, like, whatever. I don't know. Something about it just, for me, flows from panel to panel easier if I do, like, horizontal panels. So I don't know.
No, certainly, I mean,
I'm sure it is a film influence.
You mix it up in certain stories, but I've noticed in Sweet Tooth you have this wonderful style that you're utilizing. It does read very filmically.
Yeah.
If that's even a word. I guess. In 2003, you produced two mini-comics, Ashtray 1 and 2. Were these your first published work?
Yeah, those are just, like, photocopied. I think it was at one of these shows. It was, like, the first show I ever did.
Right.
What year was that? 2003?
I think it was 2003.
Yeah. I was just selling those at one of these shows. And then I got the Zurich grant.
For Lost Dogs.
Which is kind of like my first long-form kind of work.
Now, what made you decide to go from doing mini comics, which are relatively little effort.
Yeah.
Although I haven't seen Ashtray 1 and 2, so I can't say exactly how long they were. And then you decided to jump into Lost Dogs, which is like this, it's pretty substantial.
Yeah, it was like 100 pages or something. I don't know. I always, all my ideas were always for longer things. I just, I think when I was still trying to find my style and stuff, that's why I was doing the shorter comics first, just trying, kind of experimenting with different drawing styles, different storytelling styles and stuff. And I think once I started to feel like I was kind of finding a voice, then all my stories tend to be really long. I never get any ideas for short stories.
Really?
Yeah.
For Essex, which is what, like about 800 pages?
I don't know, 500.
It's an enormous work. Did you plan that all out ahead of time?
No.
It was more organic.
Yeah.
So you did the first
book. I did the first book, and then I guess probably near the end of finishing working on that, I started to get an idea for the second book, just a loose idea.
Mm-hmm.
Still not really knowing how they would tie together. And it was all really organic. Just over the course of working on it, it just sort of, you make little connections and the story kind of grew and into something that was connected directly. And then by the time I got to the third book, that was a conscious effort to tie everything together and stuff. So, but definitely the first two, it wasn't really a big master plan or anything. It just sort of all kind of grew as I was working on it. So,
well, obviously, winning the competition for a Zurich grant must have been kind of a boost.
I mean, at that point, it was kind of at that point where either something was going to happen to encourage me or nothing would happen. I probably would have, I don't know what would have happened to me. You spend so much time alone drawing the stuff. And
sure.
You get to, after a while, you just don't even know if what you're doing is good anymore because no one sees it. And so when someone, an outside party like that, who kind of validates you and says, yeah, what you're doing is good.
Sure.
You know, it kind of reinvigorates you and stuff. So it was definitely like a nice thing.
And what was the process for that? It's an application?
Yeah, I had applied like 3 times for all those mini comics and stuff for it.
Really?
Because I was broke. I mean, I couldn't print anything. I didn't have any money. And so I knew if I ever wanted to actually print something, I needed a grant or something. So I was always applying for it. And I think this was like the third application for that book that I finally got. So.
Right.
But looking back, I can see why I didn't get the earlier ones. My work just wasn't there yet. So.
Now, Top Shelf picked you up shortly after Lost Dogs.
Yeah, I actually did the first Essex County book.
You self-published that one?
Yeah, I was going to self-publish it again. I just sort of did it, finished the whole thing, and my plan was I'll send it to a couple publishers that I respect and who I would actually want to publish it, and if they don't buy it, I'll just self-publish. But Top Shelf...
They took it,
yeah, so that kind of worked out. And then I don't know, I remember how we started talking about doing, like, the trilogy or whatever. It just sort of... I think I just said, oh, I'm working on... And maybe I was already working on the second book, and they, so they just kind of said, sure. So, yeah, it worked out.
That's fantastic. In the intro to Collected Essex County, Darwin Cook, you ranks your graphic novel alongside Margaret Lawrence, Mordecai Richler, and Margaret Atwood. How do you feel about being placed in this pantheon? It's kind of weird.
What you're supposed to say. That's nice.
It's nice.
I mean, I like I have a lot of respect for Darwin, so
sure.
When someone you respect says something that nice about you, it feels good. But
no, he's a sharp guy for sure. You've also made no effort to hide the Canadianness of work. You haven't put your stuff in a fictional town, nor have you Americanized it. Do you think this has affected the reception of the work outside of Canada in any way?
It seemed to have. I mean, it sells a lot more in the States than it does here. And,
really?
You know, when the central themes are like hockey and small town Canada, so I think the hockey stuff is... If you're into hockey and stuff, I think you can really enjoy it on one level, but if you don't know anything about hockey, it's just sort of like a metaphor that people can understand, you know?
Sure.
It doesn't seem to have stopped anyone from getting into the book, so... I think people just... Anyone from a small town anywhere in North America can relate to that. That kind of a... the story or whatever, so it doesn't seem... The specific Canadianness of it hasn't seemed to have... And maybe Americans kind of like... Kind of like that. It's like a little
seems
window
foreign,
into their neighbors.
Sure. Yeah. Foreign, but still familiar enough.
Exactly,
that,
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about growing up in the real Essex County? To what extent were the elements of the book autobiographical? Did you play hockey as a kid?
Yeah, I did. I grew up playing hockey. I mean, the Lester character was really pretty much me. I mean, I fictionalized... I guess I dramatized a lot. Like, my parents are both still alive and stuff, so, like, sort of the aspects of him being an orphan were just a way of making him even more isolated and lonely. That didn't happen to me, but it's just, you use sort of narrative devices like that to not exaggerate, but sort of heighten the emotion against you. So, his personality and everything, I think, was a lot like me. I was, like, a real loner and just drew all the time and always was off by myself imagining crazy scenarios.
No, I mean, I grew up in small town Ontario, too, up in northern Ontario, and it seemed like hockey was the currency.
Yeah.
You know, everybody
one thing
was into it.
It seemed like everyone, when you're in a small town, especially, I feel like it's like the one thing everyone could kind of relate. Church and hockey are like the two things where people can all get on the same page.
Well, we were all heathens, so it was just hockey.
That's even better.
The Essex County book seems to present a romanticized version of modern farm life. If anything, it looks like it takes place circa 1970s, before massive modernization and suburban sprawl. Can you comment on the sense of time and place that you created for the fictional world of Essex?
Yeah, that was a really conscious thing where, I mean, if you go to Essex County now, and even at the time these books are supposed to have been set, I mean, you're going to see big box stores and, you know,
right,
all that stuff. But I wanted, like you said, I wanted to create almost like an idealized version where none of that existed. It was all just big open roads still, and the only stores around were just like little corner shops owned by like local people, and you know what I mean? Like, so it is sort of an imaginary place, sort of where time, you'll never see a computer, you'll never see like a Tim Hortons or
sure,
you know, whatever, you know what I mean? It's like a little pocket universe where it's sort of time stands still, I guess. And, which is, I don't know, it's just, on part of it, it's just that's, I didn't want to draw that other stuff because it's not nice to look at, so it's not nice to draw and stuff. But I just wanted to create like this, yeah, I guess it's just sort of an alternate reality where only the good stuff is there.
Sure. Yeah. It's like you're acting as a cinematographer and you're just, you know, knocking out certain things.
Yeah.
Other themes in your work revolve around the rights of masculinity, such as boxing and hockey thuggery. This sort of thing played a part in your growing up as a kid. Like,
yeah, I guess. I don't know. I try not to analyze too much of this stuff. Like, where that like comes from. But
when I was a kid, all my cousins were into, like, wrestling.
I was never... I don't know if you can tell this by looking at me, but I was never the type of guy.
Okay.
Growing up.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe I often, I think, felt intimidated by those kind of like really...
Those personalities?
Yeah, those big jockey kind of guys and stuff. I was always the quiet, introverted guy, so... but I think it's weird that it seems like I always have one character who's like the quiet, innocent, introverted character, and then like the big hawking like sidekick or whatever. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
The scope of Essex is very literary in nature. Their themes of loss, aging, and survival, they're universal. Sense of time passing gives it real weight. The trilogy is structured more like a traditional novel. Can you talk about the writers who have influenced your vision outside of comics?
It probably would have been a lot of filmmakers like Wim Wenders.
Okay.
And people like that. But I was really also really into Steinbeck when I was writing Essex County, and he just really has this way of capturing that sort of, he'll create like a community within each of his novels filled with like a cast of characters, and it just seems like a real place, and I don't know, I guess that's what I was trying to do. But as far as the scope, like I said, it wasn't something like I was consciously
that you were shooting for.
Yeah, it just sort of all kind of developed as I was working on it, so
okay.
Yeah.
The pitch for Nobody seems like Fargo meets The Invisible Man. The device inserting this fantastical character in a mundane setting really gives the story weight. How much was the original H.G. Wells an inspiration for that book?
Oh, it was a big influence. I loved that book when I was growing up. That and The Time Machine were like my two favorite novels when I was a little kid. So, I think I was rereading it right as I was finishing Essex County, and it just—I just thought, oh, what about this? Is like totally public domain now. This whole—it would be fun just to take this guy and throw him into Essex County and see what happens. That's what I did.
Wow, is that how you pitched it to Vertigo?
Pretty much, yeah. It was just like, yeah.
Look, I'm going to insert this, you know, this into my traditional sort
of
world.
just I'm going to take the sort of this crazy science fiction concept and put it into like this small town kind of setting and see how the people react to it.
Were the elements of small-town paranoia around Griffin something you'd experienced yourself?
I mean, we talked about Essex County kind of being like the idealized version of a small town where, I mean, a lot of the people in it are suffering and in a lot of pain, but at the end, the families all come together and support each other and stuff. And so this was almost like the other side of small-town life where
right. There's
a lot of bigotry and small-mindedness as well in
Absolutely.
A small town, and it was kind of like a flip side of Essex County, almost. Like, I'll take this darker character and then kind of show the other side of why small towns can be an awful place to live in if you're different. So.
Absolutely. On to Sweet Tooth. The character Jeopard is, for me, Charlton Heston straight out of a Mega Man. Is this a tribute to that genre of science fiction?
He's more like the Punisher for me.
The Punisher,
yeah.
Okay.
It's like you take sort of that stereotypical cold killer, tough guy, Clint Eastwood kind of character. And that's how he is as our story begins, but then you slowly peel that away and turn him into something completely different by the end of it. So. And likewise, Gus starts as this complete doe-eyed innocent, and he'll be something very different as well at the end of the journey.
And
obviously the influence they're each having on, they'll have on each other is going to be sort of the instigator of change in both of them. So.
Do you have a finite sort of idea of how long you want to go with the series?
Yeah, it's all really plotted out pretty strictly. I mean, I've known the ending right from the start. I always know my endings, and that's where I write for. So, yeah, it's pretty much plotted out to about 35 issues right now, and I don't really see that changing. I mean, when I first started, it was about 24, and it's grown a bit as I've kind of expanded the cast and stuff, but I don't see it going much more than 35 or 40 issues.
That's great, because, I mean, sometimes...
Yeah, I don't want to... It's like I have one story I want to tell, and I don't want to just stretch it out just because the book's successful, because that's the worst thing you can do, I think. You should get out when it's still... People are still enjoying it, and you're still doing good work and stuff, and not just...
Trying to milk it.
Yeah, don't milk it. Just get out and move on to something else. Yeah.
Jose Villarrubia is doing the colors on the book.
Yeah.
What extent do you dictate color choices for him?
Not much at all.
Not much at all?
No,
I mean,
the first issue was just sort of a learning process where I think, if anything, he adapted to me more than me to him. So mm-hmm. It was like he just kind of took a look at how I drew and stuff and developed a style that fit it. And then I just trusted him. And I mean, if there's something really specific to the plot, like this needs to be read or something, whatever, you know, I'll say that, but otherwise I just let him do his thing.
And, right. You know. Do you keep in touch in terms of emails and stuff?
Not a lot.
Not really.
Yeah.
You just get the book and you go, wow, it looks great.
Yeah, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
developed a very complimentary style.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I chose him to be my colorist for a reason, because I knew he would get, I knew he got my stuff, so I was never worried about him.
Right.
I mean, we talked about the overall sort of look and stuff at the beginning, and the tone and the mood and stuff, and then he just sort of developed a palette, and now it's just a matter of being consistent.
So you're actually able to dictate who you wanted for colors on that book?
Yeah, I picked him, so.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Can you describe your process in when you're working on a book in terms of how you create a page? Like, are you a guy who likes to do thumbnails?
Sure, yeah, I do. Well, I do like a full script for myself, even though I'm drawing myself. I still, that's sort of how I break down. That's just sort of me breaking down each scene into the correct amount of pages to make sure it all fits in the 22 pages or whatever. So I'll do a full script, but it won't have any, obviously, any visual description or anything, because, I mean, I already, in my head, I'm already seeing how I want to draw it. So it's just mostly dialogue and breaking down the page into panels and stuff. And then I'll take that and do thumbnails for each page. Just really loose, like stick figures, basically.
What size would you be doing those thumbnails?
Like just little.
Okay.
And that's what I send my editor as my pencil.
Right.
And then my actual penciling is super loose. I just, like, I have some originals here, but it's basically just basic anatomy and just figure out any little drawing problems you might have in a panel. And
right.
Most of the work's all done in ink. I just go for it, and if I screw up, I just do it again and paste it on top, you know?
Really?
But yeah, I my whole thing is I try to be really spontaneous and get as much energy into the drawing as I can, so.
Are you using ink washes or watercolor for your stuff?
Just black and white ink line work. Yeah, I've been doing a bit of wash stuff in the most recent issues, but it's mostly just, yeah, ink. So, pen and brush.
So it's a very direct technique.
Yeah,
you're just very painterly. You're
like
just
I'll pencil a page. Like I'll wake up in the morning and I'll sit down and I'll pencil a page in like, I don't know, 20 minutes or something, and then I'll just start inking it right away.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually do one That's page amazing. In the morning, one in the afternoon.
So
like
about
that.
4 hours for a page.
Yeah, so. But when I was doing Essex County, there were days where I did like 5 or 6 pages.
Really?
So, but I've gotten a lot slower since then. But
why do you think that is?
I just, my style's gotten a little tighter since then.
Okay.
But, but yeah, I mean, I had, when I did Lost Dogs, I did the last 14 pages of Lost Dogs in one day, so.
That's amazing. I think you're getting up there with Jess Marsh. He used to be able to crank out an issue of Tarzan in over a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it's again, good. He had a very sort of gestural style with a lot of large shapes. And,
yeah,
and
I'm lucky that my style just complements speed, like it's just a part of what I do, so I'm lucky to be able to produce it that fast so that I can work on all these other projects on the side and stuff. So most guys don't have that luxury because it takes them a lot longer to draw the books. So.
Now your style looks very, very intuitive. Do you ever utilize reference material at all?
Only very little. Like, I mean, if there's like something very specific, like the issue of Sweet Tooth I just finished was 13, and there's a scene with like an army helicopter, so I mean, I don't know what that looks like, so I'll just grab a couple pictures of it, but it's never like a trace or anything. I just kind of look at it and, you know,
just use it as quick reference.
Yeah, I just
Google
even
it.
That I just like kind of, it's very loosely based on,
right.
You know? It's, I don't know, I was talking to probably a couple of these people earlier at my table about, I'm never really interested in how what something's supposed to look like or like the realistic kind of approach to drawing something. It's more of just getting at the emotion of it and communicating the idea clearly. And
you're looking for gesture, expression.
Yeah, if I'm clearly communicating what it is and what's happening, that's all that matters. And then the really important thing is always the emotional sort of content of the drawing. You're trying to convey an emotion in, either in a face or in whatever's happening. And that's what I try to focus on rather than trying to be a realistic or whatever, you know.
Now, a lot of artists I know, they have a mirror at their drawing table. Do you use anything
like
that?
I can't stand that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't like looking at my face. No, I don't like, that's kind of creepy. I don't like looking at my own face and drawing it. Yeah, it's weird.
So it's all up here then? It's all out of your head?
I just make it up the face.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
so. Okay. Yeah. Would anybody else like to ask some questions to Jeff while we're in?
Do you have any
Well, yep, sorry, I didn't do that very well. Gentlemen in the fourth row first, please. Go ahead, you. Man. You, sir. He, yeah, sir, yes.
Would you ever make a Sweet Tooth movie now?
No. It's weird. I don't really want any of my comics to become movies. I just feel like too many people doing comics like are just waiting for that big movie deal to make their book seem legitimate, or I don't know. It's like, why can't a comic just be a comic, and why can't that be enough? I don't know. To me, comics are better than movies anyway. So, I don't. But having said that, I don't. Part of my contract with Vertigo and stuff is I actually don't have a lot of control over what happens with the movie rights and stuff, so unfortunately. But I know there's some interest in Essex County being turned into a movie, and I'm really hesitant about that. Cause, I don't know, I feel like it is exactly what I wanted it to be. I don't need a movie to validate it or to make it. You know. But then there's, you know, the flip side is if a movie does get made, then chances are tens of thousands of people who never would have read my comics might read them, so yeah, I don't know. It's you know, I don't know. It doesn't, movies and stuff don't really, there's a lot of guys out there, trust me, making comics just to make, get a movie deal, like, yeah, just to get option, so, but you can usually tell which comics are better, because they're not very good.
Gentleman in the back there?
Would you ever consider developing an animated series?
Yeah, people always ask me about animation and stuff, but I've never liked animation. I've never had any connection to animation or ever enjoyed watching it. Or people would think comics and animation would be so close that if you like one, you like the other. But for some reason, I've never enjoyed animation. I can't even watch The Simpsons. I just don't like cartoons. So I don't
know.
It's
not your thing.
I don't like my drawings moving. No, I don't know. I just don't. I'm not into animation at all. Yeah, it's just, I'm really into comics. It's just, it's this medium that I've always loved, and I don't really want to do anything else.
Yeah. I think you're one of the few cartoonists that's actually said that they would not want to have their stuff turned into a film.
Yeah, I don't. I really honestly don't want my stuff to be made into a film, but like I said, you can't always control that.
So sure.
There's, you know, if you want to get paid a page rate, you have to give some things up. So.
But with Essex, you have complete control over that.
Yeah, I do. But at the same time, there's still, I don't know, a company like Top Shelf doesn't make a lot of money on their books, so how they're going to make money is by making movies of their stuff eventually. So, I don't know, you have to balance letting them do that.
So they can publish future books.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very complicated. I can't say my stuff will never be movies, but
right.
I don't know. If it was up to me and I didn't, you know, I could just control it all, I wouldn't ever let any of my stuff be a movie.
That's fantastic. Reels? Yes, sir.
I saw the photo of the Dolly White made from the Vertigo blog.
Mm-hmm.
So we gonna see like stuffies or action figures?
I wish they would like put that out, because I've had so many people emailing me wanting to buy one.
That's the goodest thing ever.
Yeah.
Can your wife make them quickly?
No.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
To be honest, the actual creative process is no different. I mean, I've been really lucky with Vertigo that they've been really hands-off. Like, they just sort of, I guess they liked what I did, so they just keep letting me do it. They're very hands-off creatively. They've never suggested I change a word or a panel. So it's just really, it's been the same process as with Top Shelf. The difference is I get paid, which is nice, and the book comes out every month, so you're constantly getting feedback, which is also really nice. It kind of keeps you going, whereas if you're doing a graphic novel, you could spend 2-3 years on it before anyone ever reads it, so that's a lot of time to have something in your head by yourself without knowing if it's any good. So.
Will that change your approach with any of your other larger works?
No, I think this will probably be the last time I ever do an ongoing kind of comic like this. I think I'm much more suited for like a graphic novel format with a beginning and an end, and I just start and finish it all, you know. So. But at the same time, I don't know how long comic periodicals are going to be around the way the industry's going, so it's really cool to be able, have a chance to do one while they're still around. So, yeah.
Anybody else?
When you're writing for somebody else, how's that different than writing for yourself?
It's a lot different, actually.
Are you a lot more detailed?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, when I'm writing for myself, I don't, like I said earlier, I don't put any visual description at all. You know what I mean? I know what I want to draw. So. But when I'm writing for someone else, I have to really, in detail, explain exactly what's in the panel. You have to convey a lot of visual information and stuff, so it takes a lot longer. And also you want to be able to trust the artists that you have and let them have some freedom to do their thing and put their stamp on it too, so you have to let go of it and just kind of...
So you don't like break it down panel by
panel? I do. I break down the page layouts is one thing I kind of like to control because that's the storytelling, you know? But as far as a lot of the details within the panel, I let them kind of have fun and figure that out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they're both really like up and coming guys. So you probably have never heard of them, but the guy doing the Atom is a guy named. He's from Turkey, and his name's Mahmoud Ashrar. He did a book called Dynamo 5. I don't know if anyone's read it, but I've seen the first two issues of the Atom that he's penciled. They're fantastic, really good stuff.
So how do you feel about seeing? I was just saying before your process, you know. The outcome is you're loose to the pinks and so on. So how do you feel about seeing stuff coming out like TypeScript?
Yeah, it's weird at first. It takes a minute to adjust your thinking, but then it's also really fun because I never surprise myself. You know what I mean? Like I kind of know what my stuff's going to look like before I even start drawing it. So this way I get these pages back and it's like a complete surprise half the time of what it looks like. And it's really fun to see someone else interpreting something completely different than you had in your head, and often it works just as well, but it's just very different, you know. It's fun. It's doing the superhero stuff has been like so different from doing Essex County or Sweet Tooth that it's like when I get really tired working on Sweet Tooth, I need a break. It's fun to go and do that, and vice versa. So it's fun to have these two sort of things to bounce back and forth to keep myself energized or whatever.
Anyone else got any good questions? One more from this
gentleman. Sweet Tooth. I really like Scalped from Vertigo. I'm a big fan of that book. I like Walking Dead. I like... What else have I been reading? I always get these questions, and I never can think of all the books I'm reading. Criminal's really good. Yeah, I don't know. Those are the ones that come to mind.
I think we've run out of time. I'd like to thank Jeff for coming by and talking with us about his career. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much for everyone coming out.
Yeah, thanks for coming.